When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, Rod. Just before we start, listen for a pretty big announcement about the podcast in the middle of the show. You'll hear it then. Cheers.
In a normal year, Manchester United would be preparing to play their third Premier League game of the season. New signings would be on show. Transfer rumours would persist through the season's opening stages. Fans would have returned to Old Haun, some making the same journey down some at Busby Way, some meeting the same friends in the same bar in Dublin, London, Belfast, New York, Seattle, Kentucky, Johannesburg, Sydney, Perth, Delhi, Tokyo, wherever. But this is and has been no ordinary year. And so it's almost the end of August, and only now can we reflect on Manchester United's 2019-20 campaign, the longest in the club's history, a drawn-out season filled with ups and downs. United end the season without a trophy for the third consecutive year, but they also ended three places higher in the Premier League than last year. Fewer goals conceded and more goals scored, but they achieved the same number of points, not any more, 66 points in the Premier League. And these contradictions is why it's so hard to sum up United's season, but that's what we're doing today. Welcome back to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast for the penultimate episode of Series 5. Coming up next week, a special episode on the making of Mason Greenwood. But for the next 45 minutes or so, we're reviewing the season. We'll be talking about where the improvements have been over the season, where future improvements must be. We'll quickly run through our best player of the season, moment, goal and match, etc. And then we'll discuss what is United's best 11 right now. How many of our squad are title winning or potential title winning players? And then we'll return to the topic we can never avoid at this time of year, which is transfers. And then we'll wrap things up after that. So let's get stuck in. Jack, it's been a long season, and we've certainly felt that, including special episodes this season. We've had 50 episodes, and I suppose if you went back and listened to the episodes that we recorded in the wake of Manchester United 2, Burnley 2, or Watford 2, Manchester United 0, there would be some very frustrated conversations, and the same was true 8 months later, just the other week when we lost to Sevilla. And yet in between and before were some incredible matches, some incredible highs and moments. And I guess all of this is to say it's been a strange season, but it's kind of been a good one. And what's important to talk about is where has the main improvement been compared to last year?
Well, I think it has to be in defence. Certainly hasn't been perfect, and there is still a long way for us to go in terms of improving in defence. But our defensive record has been the single most important factor in improving our outcome this season. If you look at the table from last season and this season, we scored only one more goal this season than last, 65 in 18-19 and 66 this season. But we conceded 18 less goals. That is the difference. That is fundamentally the difference between Manchester United a year ago and Manchester United now. That is a huge difference that's won us so many points across the season. We had the ninth best defensive record last season, and we've taken that from ninth best to third best this season. City and Liverpool combined conceded less goals than we did last season, and admittedly, they have both regressed to the mean a little bit and conceded more this season. But we were only conceded one more than City and three more than Liverpool this season. There's a lot more to be done in that. You know, we'll come on to this later. I think defence is actually still one of, if not the biggest focus for this upcoming transfer window. But that is the biggest single source of improvement across the season, I think, undoubtedly.
Yeah, And at times it's kind of, you've watched the defence and thought, how is this team got one of the best defensive records in Europe? But it does. It's like there's lots of sportsmen and sportswomen like this who have kind of a strange technique, but they manage to deliver what they're meant to be there. And United's defence...
I think we ended up with the most clean sheets in Europe at the end of the season. We didn't have the best defensive record, but I think it was most clean sheets.
Yeah, now see that's crazy, because there's been so many times when you've looked at United's defence and there's been some kind of mishap or two or three within the space of a couple of minutes. And we're so used to that. And I don't think anyone trusts this United defence, but it has delivered results. And it's not the same way as under Van Gaal, when, for example, Chris Smalling looked brilliant because he had a very stodgy team in front of him who all did the defensive work and did very little attacking, very boring, kept possession a lot and conceded few chances and so conceded not many goals. United's team has sat back at times, but in general have dominated the games they're in, and still we've managed to have this good defensive record. So it's certainly a positive, no matter how worrying it might be at times. It's certainly a positive. But I think for me that there's two main things. And the first, and this isn't a quantifiable thing, and it's perhaps most linked to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and we've said this, I think, a lot when reviewing him as a manager, is just the mood and the sense that United are in the right direction now. And the defence plays a contributing factor to that, but also you've got this really exciting young front line, front three, and Manchester United lead for goals scored by under-25s in all competitions. Out of all of Europe's top five leagues, the teams in those leagues this season. So that you've got this combined factor of the improved defence and a really young and exciting front three.
I think that age is a huge factor. We had the youngest starting 11 on average in the Premier League all season, just ahead of Chelsea. And that is a huge part of this. You know, it's not just... I don't think when you look across the season, I actually don't think other than defence, there's been many areas that are massively better than they were last season, especially last season under Solskjaer.
Yeah.
I think what's happened though is that there's been small improvements in a lot of areas, and where those improvements have happened are in places where you expect there to be more growth coming.
Yeah.
So you think of the front line, exactly like you said, coming from last season where we had normally Lukaku up front. Lukaku's a very good player and I don't think was too bad for us, but I didn't really see Lukaku improving that much at United. He's already kind of hit his peak. But now you look at Greenwood, obviously he's only 17, there's so far to go. Rashford has been improving and had his best season ever at United. Martial probably had the best 2-3 month stretch that he's ever had in his career.
Yeah.
You know, these are players that you think can improve. And I think that is the biggest thing. It's the same, you know, when you look at Aaron Wan-Bissaka, right back, think of Scott McTominay in midfield. Even Paul Pogba and Bruno Fernandes, even if they can't improve, have improved others around them. I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah. I don't actually think, apart from the defensive record, that we are that much better now than we were this time last season. But I think the room for growth now is so much higher than it was this time last year.
Yeah, and I also think that one of the big positives is that it's not been huge improvements within certain players. But I think most people would say Marcus Rashford had a better year this year than he did last year. And the same could be said for Anthony Martial, Luke Shaw, Brandon Williams has come in. I think Wan-Bissaka has improved over the course of the season. I think Lindelof has improved over the course of the season. McTominay has, Matic has. And there's definitely, you watch Anthony Martial and Rashford in particular now, and you can see the influence of Solskjaer and the United coaches on their development. And I don't think, under Mourinho, for example, I don't always want to bring it back to the previous manager because you're kind of drawing yourself to a bad comparison, but we didn't see that. And being able to look back at last August and see the players that we had then and see how they've improved over the course of the season is a massive positive.
Well, it's what we've banged on about for years, ever since the Van Gaal era, is that when we sign players or when players come through the academy, we seem unable to make players improve once they get to the United first team. I can't remember the last time we signed a player that came in that was a good player and then we turned them into a world-class player. It just doesn't happen at United anymore. And that is honestly...
Yeah, whereas Wan-Bissaka this season, I think as recently as... Well, in fact, late December, I remember talking about this quite consistently, saying Wan-Bissaka's been an incredible tackler. His reading of the game and the timing of his tackle has been sensational and at times breathtaking. And it genuinely is. It's great to watch him go in for a tackle. But his attacking play wasn't good enough. And not just wasn't good enough, but was so far from good enough. He was offering so little. Yeah. And now you look and there's signs of he's not good enough yet, but he's managed to add to his game certain manoeuvres, the cutback and then the cross on his left foot, his weaker foot, that got the assist for Martial at Chelsea at Stamford Bridge away. And he's done that time and time again.
Like a stop-start move as well.
Yeah. And it's not just him, it's Martial as well. We're seeing is a much better with his back to goal, is learning when he needs to come back and drop deep to get the ball and run onto to the goal. So there's those little things and they're massive improvements. And we're going to move on to where future improvements can be in just a second. But I think there's a lot of improvements. We can't go through them all. And I think we have kind of discussed them over the course of the season, obviously. But any others you want to note now?
No, I think that's it. It really is just... I think almost every player has made a small improvement this season. I think that's the thing. It's other than the defensive record, it's hard to pinpoint one exact area where so much has changed, but it's just been small improvements all over the pitch that have then added up to be a team that is, I think anyway, quite considerably better than it was both at the end of last season and at the start of this season.
There's one more thing I'd say is that since, let's say, January, I can't pinpoint it. But United's reputation and the things that United have done have massively improved. I'm mainly talking off the pitch and the relations with the fans, the connection between players, manager, fans, but also just between the club. And that doesn't mean that relations with Ed Woodward or the Glazers have improved. I still think the vast majority of United fans remain furious and sometimes disgusted at the way the Glazers run the club and the way they take dividends out, even in a time of a global pandemic, while citing lack of transfer funds for the reasons for not signing Jadon Sancho. But there remains that sentiment. But there have been other things, like United keeping all their workers, still paying all their workers and saying you don't have to come and work for us, but you should go out and volunteer to help your local community. That's a brilliant thing to do. And United have done similar things time and time again this season. And that's a massive change. I don't think that's been the case for a decade at United. And it was always a really sad thing to look at your own club and think you're not a great set of people at the top there. And now you look and think there are bad apples there, but it's been a reminder of how many good people there are at Manchester United as an institution. And that's really nice. Let's go on to where our future improvements can be. If you were telling Ole Gunnar Solskjaer now, you are sat down with him and you have to say the one thing I want to see United improve next season, what would it be?
I think I'd start by asking him how long it normally takes him to make a sub in any given game. And when he tells me it's the 85th minute, I'd be like, there's your answer, because we need some better squad depth. I mean, I think it's the complete obvious answer. You know, obviously we need some signings on the pitch. You know, Jadon Sancho would be great. A new centre-back to partner Harry Maguire would be great. You know, maybe another midfielder, but the squad depth is the biggest thing. I mean, you saw it, and admittedly, the last few months have been strange because we're playing a lot more games in a shortened period of time than we normally would. But, I mean, you could see it.
Yeah.
Because Solskjaer has no faith in his bench, which I actually completely understand, it just means that, one, we play the same 11 every single week and teams learn how to play against us. But two, and more important, we were just exhausted. I mean, ever since... It was really the Southampton game, the 2-2 draw, that was the big turning point. Ever since that game, we've looked knackered every single game. And we came back against Copenhagen, it looked a little bit better, but then obviously got taken to extra time. And then against Sevilla, we just lost our legs at the end.
Yeah.
And we can't keep playing the same 11 over and over again, and that goes back to the squad depth. And we also, when we are drawing or losing a game and we need someone to change the game, there isn't really anyone for Solskjaer to turn to. And I do feel for him in that regard. I think he could, you know, react to things better in games, but he doesn't have the players. And that, as we've said so many times before on here, Man City are the model for this. in that you can never have too many good players, and it's up to the manager to manage them, which Pep Guardiola has done brilliantly at Man City. And it shouldn't be that you have one first 11 and then one second 11 that are all on the bench.
Yeah.
You should have 15, 16 players that are good enough to all be in your first starting 11.
Well, yeah, look, if you take away Bruno Fernandes from the situation, and you're, I think you're saying something slightly different, because I think I saw this, and I'll check this after and correct myself if not, but I think Andreas Pereira is the player with the most minutes in that attacking midfield position, or that third midfield position, for United this season, which is almost beyond belief.
That's a sobering reality, yeah.
So without Bruno Fernandes in that team, you're saying this needs an urgent injection of quality. Because he's there, and because Paul Pogba's come back, I think the focus has shifted onto squad depth, and rightly so. We're actually going to talk in a few minutes about, is every player good enough to be in a title-winning squad? So we'll do that in a bit. But in terms of squad depth, you have got this weird contradiction. I think we've spoken about this, so I won't do it for too long. But I think Solskjaer should have used someone like Odegaard much more in the Europa League, and in the weeks building up to the end of the season after football restarted. Odegaard did a great job for United before lockdown, and then was basically ignored or brought on at the 89th minute, in which case he's not going to do anything. And you had other players. You had Tees Chong, Dan James, who you can't rely on. And there's no pretending about that. You cannot rely on them to change the game for you. But if they'd been used earlier in games when United were winning, then maybe they would have been more ready, more confident to be able to rely on when things actually mattered. So Solskjaer clearly mismanaged that in some regards. On the other hand, the squad depth is appalling. And you look at United's second options to replace Martial, not good enough. Rashford, not good enough. Greenman, not good enough. The midfield, well, now you're really in trouble. And when you take Harry Maguire out of the equation, then you're looking at a really shaky defence, or at least you would feel it would be a shaky defence. So, yeah, massive problem. We've mentioned the fullbacks in attack as well. I said that's improved, but I think that needs to be built on next season. And I think something we saw in the Sevilla game and the Copenhagen game too, game management. This team is still really young and sometimes quite naive.
Big time. And that naivety, I think, is pervasive across both the players and the coaching staff, to be honest. You know, I think Solskjaer is still a pretty inexperienced manager, and we shouldn't expect him, and I certainly don't expect him to be an expert at managing these games. But it is an area we need to improve on. You know, just as you think towards the end of the season, there's a lot of games that we just didn't see the game out properly. I go back to the Southampton game where, you know, I was livid after that game with the way we tried to see it out and ended up conceding to draw the game 2-2. Even against Sevilla, you know, we didn't do a good enough job of understanding, you know, all right, we need a breather here. Let's just keep the ball for 5 or 10 minutes. And we couldn't do it. It was all, for a lack of a better word, it was all helter-skelter football all the time, which is fun to watch. But it means, one, your players are going to get tired very, very quickly. And two, you leave yourself open at the back.
Yeah.
And we do need to figure out, how do we manage a game? And it was the same thing against Sevilla after we went ahead as well. I was also furious about this, about, you know, why after we take the lead is our default reaction to then sit back and invite pressure. We used to do it under Mourinho, and it cost us so many times. We used to hate it, and I still hate it now. And it needs to come from the coaching staff to instill a different mindset in the players, or to get rid of that mindset that we have at the moment. It's something that comes with experience, though. You know, every young team struggles with this, and I think the good thing is that you do see a little bit. I really hate the word project in football now, but you do see a little bit of a project building at United. Of this is a young team kind of being moulded in Solskjaer's image, and it will get better with experience. You know, as painful as they have been, the three semi-final defeats this season will stand us in good stead going forward, because it's experience that we can learn from. And it will come, but it needs, I think, it needs to be something that we see some improvement in next season, definitely, because I think for most of us, next season should be the time when we're sort of building towards launching a full assault on the Premier League title in 2021-22.
Yeah. I think what's nice about this United team is that while we're all desperate to make some signings, or to see United make some signings, whoever that may be, even if United didn't sign anyone, And this would be a huge mistake. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, but even if United didn't sign anyone, the team would be better next year, because
Mason Greenwood would be another year older, another year under his belt. Same for Marcus Rashford, Anthony Martial, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Lindelof, who looks better the more he plays. And the same would be true for McTominay. You're welcoming new young players into the mix. So I think that's a real positive. And then when you add good transfers in, and we'll talk about transfers later, then you should be on your way to something. And you've got to hope that we will be. Right, let's go on to our bests of the season. We'll start with goal. My two best goals of the season, or the two I enjoyed most, but appreciated most for their quality as goals rather than their moments. But Anthony Martial against Norwich, where he kind of missed the chance and then just completely did the keeper with a kind of a Cruyff turn and then a chip over the goalkeeper, was incredible. And also Odinegaard against Las Glins away from home, which was a real shame. I mean, that was the first game behind closed doors, and it's a real shame that no fans were there to witness that, because that was an incredible goal. The kind of three touches down between left foot, and then an absolute screamer. So those are my two goals. Jack, what are yours?
Yeah, I also had Martial versus Norwich on my list. I also had Martial versus Bournemouth recently in lockdown, our third goal in that game. He picks up the ball on the left, cuts inside and bends it just beautifully into the far corner. But yeah, the goal for me that I would give as my goal of the season by quite some distance, to be honest, would be Bruno Fernandes against Brighton. Just an amazing counter-attack. I love counter-attacking goals. And just watching that over and over again, it never gets tired. That pass from Matic, you know, the run and the cross by Greenwood and then Fernandes' finish, yeah, it's just...
Yeah.
Just sublime to watch, and I think it's classic Man United.
Yeah, you're right. That goal had everything about it, or everything apart from the reaction and the celebration with the fans after that would normally have greeted it. Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of a goal that I watched the other day, actually, of Rooney against Arsenal back in, I think it would have been 2010, wearing the black away kit.
Yeah, he had a couple against Arsenal.
Like
Yeah, he had, I think, two at the Emirates of the counter-attacking goals, one with Ronaldo and one with Park, I think.
Yeah,
and one with Di Maria as well, actually.
Yeah, and this one was with Nani and Park.
So some great goals this season, to be fair. And what's nice is that they're not all just individual goals. Some are that brilliant counter-attacking goal against Brighton that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Best moment of the season. This is one it's difficult to sum up. I'd probably say McTominay, the second goal against City, because it as a moment, it had everything. And I've not come away feeling like that from a football game for, I mean, just you rarely get those feelings, and to beat your rivals, but to wrap it up with an extra goal, just as it looked like they might get an equaliser. I don't know what happens in your brain and your body when something like that happens, but it's something special.
Yeah, it really is. I don't think that can be topped. That was not just a properly good moment for this season, but a properly good moment, I think, to rival a lot that has happened in the last decade at Man United. It was a properly good moment. Just like you said, the emotion of the whole thing, you know, it was a last game as well with fans in our last Premier League game before lockdown. We were hanging on by the skin of our teeth, and it just felt like City were going to grab a goal. It felt inevitable, like it was coming.
Yeah.
For us not only to hold on, but... And the other thing is as well, the goal came out of nowhere. Like, I remember every time I watch it, I'm expecting the commentator or the fans to kind of realise that the ball is falling to McTominay before they do. And no one really seemed to realise what was happening until the ball is almost in the net. Like, any commentary that you watch on it, they don't even start really talking about it until the ball's in the net. Even the fans don't start standing up really until the ball is in the air. It's one of those things that kind of, it came out of nowhere. And just, I mean, what a moment, the McTominay celebration in front of the fans. I think if I was going to pick out another one, I'd probably go all the way back to the opening day of the season, to when I believe it was Rashford scored. We scored two goals in the space of that 2 minutes to take the game away from Chelsea to make it 3-1.
Yeah.
Pogba's ball over the top into Rashford, takes a great touch and slides it under Kepa. I thought that was a really, really good moment, because we didn't really know what to expect coming into the season.
Yeah, because we'd been terrible at the back end of the season before. We'd been terrible, but
and we'd had a pretty bad pre-season too.
Yeah.
And then we came in and you know, those two goals in 2 minutes, at least personally, really just lit the fire in me again.
Yeah, yeah. The McTominay one, I remember I was selling United We Stand that day, and really you're meant to leave a couple of minutes before before full time to make sure you can get out there when the masses are coming out. But it was a derby, and I didn't want to leave, so I didn't leave. But I had this box, or maybe it was a plastic bag full of fanzines, and I was just waiting to leave the stadium as soon as the full time whistle went, or maybe a bit after. And then McTominay scores, and they're just people were flying everywhere, and I was just, all I was focusing on was holding onto this bag of fanzines while hugging random strangers and going flying in the air. And that was pretty spectacular. In terms of the best match, that's up there. But I think the away game at City in the league, the 2-1, was pretty special as well.
Yeah.
And player of the season.
This was actually a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, same.
Because I was thinking, I think there's quite a lot of players who had very good spells in the season, but I don't think there's one player that was like at their best the entire season. I would say the three that come to mind would be Rashford, Martial, and Bruno Fernandes. Now, I don't love giving it to Bruno Fernandes because,
yeah,
one, you know, he's only been here since January, and two, despite how good he's been, I think he's also had a number of pretty poor performances recently.
Yeah, I'd agree.
To go along with, you know, the genuinely world-class performances we were getting in his first sort of 10, 12 games in a United shirt. So then it comes down to Rashford and Martial, and I think recency bias is going to make me go towards Martial simply because he's been so good post-lockdown, and also because he played more of the season. You know, Rashford was out for a big chunk of it, but it's worth remembering how good Rashford was in the first half of the year. You know, he was on course potentially a 30-goal season. He still ended up with, what was it, 24, 25, despite missing, you know, over 2 months. So I'd probably go Martial, and I think a lot of that is down to recency bias, but Rashford a very close second.
Yeah, it is a really hard question because Fernandes is the obvious candidate. And I think the only reason I wouldn't give it to him, look, he clearly changed our season. He completely turned it around, and I think it's fair to say that's down to him. I don't think that's doing discredit to the other members of the squad. On the other hand, that's 5 months, or, well, it would normally be 4 or 5 months. It was obviously stretched out, but it's 4 or 5 months of playing. And he did. I think for most of lockdown, he was quite poor, bar a few moments. I think reasonably so. He was very tired after about 3 games of it because he played so much.
Yeah.
And was never rested. I think it was after the Norwich FA Cup game that he started to go downhill. So he's the obvious candidate, but you've then got Rashford, who carried United all the way into January. I remember when he got injured thinking, I hope he's not out for too long. I hope he's only out for a couple of weeks, kind of, because he needs to get back and then he can compete for the Golden Boot, because he was on course to win the Golden Boot, which would have been incredible, 22 years old.
Yeah.
As it turns out, he's been incredible off the pitch as well. So there's that. Martial, definitely recently been United's best player. On the other hand, he had a couple of barren spells and had some really poor games as well. So you've got all of that. And I was asked about this recently for an article, and I ended up saying Harry Maguire because he was the most consistently good United player. And I say good like that because I don't think he's ever really had a great game. Obviously, he's a centre-back, so it's a little harder to stand out. And I don't think he's been good enough. But he has played every Premier League minute and has been United's captain for 6 months, and played kind of good for most of that time without too many mishaps. So I don't want to give it to Maguire because he's not been United's best player. But he is what I said the other day when asked about this question. I think I'd give it to... It's one you can't answer because there's so many players who had good 6 months. So
I think
there's that. I'm gonna cop out of it.
I don't know if the listeners will let you get away with that one. I think it's a tough one because I think for consistency, I probably would go Maguire. I think he's been a solid 7 out of 10 for most of the season.
Yeah,
and he's never really deviated away from that very much. You kind of know what you're going to get from him.
Yeah,
and so it really comes down to what you prefer giving this award for, sort of. The players who have produced the highest level of play. Because I think if you're going on that, it would be Rashford or Martial or maybe Fernandes. Because I think they have both had, in Rashford and Martial, genuine sort of 9, 9.5 out of 10 spells for a month or two each at a time.
Yeah.
But they've also had some spells. You know, Rashford hasn't been very good since lockdown came back. I don't know if he maybe never got back fully fit from his injury. You know, Martial, like you said, had a pretty barren run earlier in the season. So it's tough. It really depends what you go for, whether you go for consistency or sort of the highest level.
I'll give it to Rashford for the mixture of carrying us until January, which I think he did, for the incredible free kick, which we forgot to mention in goal of the season against Chelsea. Yeah, I don't know how we missed that one out, but that's up there with the best free kicks I've ever
honestly
seen.
I forget that was even this season. It feels like a
yeah, it does. It feels so long ago, which is why we've forgotten it. But that is one of the best free kicks I've ever seen, and I think I will ever see. And for being an absolute hero off the pitch, so I'll give it to Rashford. Hi everyone, it's Harry here with the announcement I trailed at the start. The announcement is that we are joining Patreon. Now, for many of you, this will be not another podcast joining Patreon. And for others, this will be, what are you talking about? Hopefully this next minute or so will answer all of your queries. So basically, Patreon is a platform where so-called content creators can share additional bonus content in return for a little bit of money. So you, the listener, gets the chance to get more episodes of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast and ad-free episodes and loads more. And in return, you give us a few quid or dollars a month. We've signed up to it because we've done this show running at a bit of a loss for almost 5 years now. And it would basically be nice to cover costs of podcast hosting, equipment, time, editing, whatever. But even more than that, and I do actually mean this, I do really want to do more with the podcast, but I can't really justify it without getting a bit of money for it. I can't spend more hours on the podcast for free, basically, because we do need to make a living. So how much is it, and how do you find out more information? Well, for both of those things, go to Patreon. That's spelt patreon.com/ManUTD. Weekly pod. That's Man United Weekly Podcast, but Man UTD Weekly Pod, P-O-D at the end there. Or go to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod. You'll find out all the information there, but basically there are four tiers of patronship. You can be a supporter for a couple of quid a month and you'll get ad-free episodes in return. For just over fiver, depending on your currency, you'll get one additional bonus episode exclusively for you each month and a shout out on the show. For just over a tenner, you can get all of that and be a member of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast WhatsApp group where we can chat about United and anything else. You'll also get an exclusive Q&A section at the end of every show we record. And for £20 or $20 or around about there a month, you can get even more bonus episodes coming from me every time I go to report on a game at Old Trafford or an away ground. I'll be talking to journalists who I know in the press box, people like Andy Mitten, Simon Peach, Mark Ogden, etc. You'll also get all extended versions of the interviews. So we've spoken to people like Andy Mitten and Simon Peach, but also people like Clive Tildesley, Barney Chilton, Daniel Harris, and you'll get the extended versions of interviews when we do them. I hope that all makes sense. And for anyone who does sign up, or at least is even interested in signing up, thank you. I really do appreciate it. And I'll let you get back to the show now. So let's carry on with part two of the season review of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Thank you for listening. Right, welcome back after the break to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast season review. Second part of the show, we're going to talk about what is Manchester United's best 11. We're going to go through every player in the squad and say whether they are good enough to be a part of a Manchester United title winning team. And then we'll talk about transfers because we can't avoid that subject. Jack, starting off, I think I briefly alluded to this in the first part of the show. We're kind of talking about what is our best 11, but also can you guess the squad or the team that has played the most based on minutes this season? Because I was quite surprised at this. If we skip the goalkeeper, because it's obviously David De Gea, beyond that, you're getting into some interesting territory. So what would you guess would be the back four that played most for Manchester United this season?
Until you phrased it like that, I was about to say I think the back four would be the easiest part of it. But the way your tone there suggests that there's some kind of surprise hidden in here. I know Harry Maguire is in there because he played every minute. I would assume Victor Lindelof is in there as well because he didn't really have any extended injuries and he pretty much played every game when he was fit. The same with Wan-Bissaka. I'm just thinking, was Shaw injured enough or getting rotated enough at some point in the season that Williams would have more minutes? Is this in all competitions?
I actually don't know what this is. I think it's all competitions, but I must have phrased it in an interesting way. It's actually very simple. You're right. Wan-Bissaka, Lindelof, Maguire, and Shaw. The interesting bit is when you get
I was just reading too much into it.
Yeah, the interesting bit is when you get into the kind of front, what we call it, front six,
So firstly, the two in midfield behind the forward line, who do you guess those would be?
One I'm pretty confident would be Fred.
Yeah.
Because he played pretty much every game until lockdown.
Yeah.
Then between McTominay and Matic, probably because he played every game post-lockdown, probably Matic.
Yeah, yeah. So Fred and Matic midfield too. I'm going to give you Rashford on the left wing and Martial up front because I don't think there's much doubt about that. The interesting one is the right winger and the attacking midfielder.
So I think from something that you said before the break, it could be Bruno Fernandes because I think I remember you saying that Pereira, other than Bruno Fernandes, has played the most minutes in that attacking midfield role. So I think that means Fernandes is first in the attacking midfield.
Interesting. I'll...
Right wing, it honestly... So I guess it's a toss-up between Dan James, Mason Greenwood, and honestly could still be Pereira again.
Yeah, that's true.
At right wing.
Yeah. Well, according to the stats I have here, and I'm beholden to the provider of the stat, the most used player on the right wing was Dan James, which isn't entirely surprising,
right.
Although he barely played for the second half of the season, so it is a little bit.
Yeah, but I guess up until February, he was starting most games.
Yeah, and the most used attacking midfielder is actually Andreas Pereira, ahead of Bruno Fernandes, which blows my mind. It's incredible. And then you've got people like Fernandes, McTominay, Greenwood, Williams, all on the bench of the most commonly used players in the Manchester United team this season.
You know, I was actually thinking this the other day. I was watching, I don't know why it came up. I think maybe it was on like the Man United Facebook page or something, but I was watching the highlights of the first game of the season against Chelsea and saw Pereira playing. And I actually, honestly, because it feels so long ago, I almost completely forget that Pereira was actually a starter for us for the first half of the season.
Yeah, and to be honest, look, he had some really poor games actually, but he also had, I think it was Burnley away, which was... I went to that. It wasn't Boxing Day. It was the 28th of December, I think. And he played on the right midfield position, I think. And everyone thought, "What? Why is he starting this game?" And he fulfilled his role to perfection and just broke everything up for Burnley. Pressed really well, counterattacked really well, and then we haven't seen him at all, which I'm quite kind of happy about because he hasn't shown himself to be good enough for United, but he was such a regular, and I think it's because it seems so far away now that we don't really remember the United team that had Dan James, Pereira in it and McTominay and Fred, but that was this season. That's which is very strange.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. It just feels it. I think was it Pereira who assisted Martial's goal against Burnley away when he won the ball back on the right?
Yeah.
Or was that someone else?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. And that was a great game, actually, away at Burnley.
Yeah, it was.
Right, we were asked a question by Angel D. Cruz on Twitter quite a few weeks ago, actually, and I said we'd come back to it at the end of the season because he said, can you speak about each position in the United team and give us a brief analysis on whether we have a player who has title-winning qualities in that position or are they just good? You guys had a great point last episode about Solskjaer and man management, but also his inability to overachieve. I think what he's referring to is that we said Solskjaer is a good manager and could win the league with a very good United team, but he won't do it with a team who isn't the very best squad in the Premier League, which United obviously don't have for now. And I think the categories of a title-winning squad are the following. You've got the sold players, so people who will be moved on before United win a title, the backup players, who will be used infrequently as a squad player, and then the rotational players will come in and out, the starting 11 and the key players. So I thought we could go through the United team and decide which category each player falls into. So Jack, I'll let you start with the goalkeepers and the defence, if you like.
Yeah, and straight away we kind of run into a bit of a problem with the goalkeeper.
yeah.
Because I would say regardless of whether it's De Gea or Dean Henderson, I think either one of them is a key player next season, regardless of who it is. So I think we can table the De Gea-Dean Henderson discussion for another time, but either way, it's a key player. Then I guess moving into defence, I think you'd put Harry Maguire as the key player in the defence, obviously club captain, and I think despite the fact that, you know, he's obviously made his mistakes and we do need to improve in the defence, I don't think he is a candidate to be, you know, sold or even put down to the bench. I think he is the key player in that back line.
See, that's interesting because I completely agree. He's obviously not anywhere near being sold or anything. And I think he could very easily be a starting centre-back when United, or if United win the league. But I would describe him as a starting player rather than a key player in a title-winning team.
I think in terms of his quality, I agree, but not in terms of his role at United, what it is at the moment.
That's true, that's true. The fullbacks, so Wan-Bissaka, Luke Shaw, Brandon Williams, Diogo Dalot even.
I think Wan-Bissaka, you'd have to say starting 11. Yeah. And again, I don't think he's in any danger of us signing anyone to replace him, especially not at this juncture. Yeah. You know, there are definitely limitations to his game, but it's not necessarily a problem area for us. And his improvement has shown that there's potentially more to come.
Yeah, I think with Wan-Bissaka, I think sometimes we're unfair to him because he's still really young and he was signed for 50 million and he's such a good defender, and he's got so many years to improve. I think sometimes we kind of think, oh, he's not Trent Alexander-Arnold, or he's not one of these great fullbacks who can provide goals and assists and everything. But he could easily be a starter for a title winning team, I think. And I don't think there's much doubt about that.
No, I agree. Then I guess if you move over to left back and Luke Shaw, I think he's a starting 11 player, but a potential candidate to be replaced in the next year or two if he performs at the same level. We've spoken about this before. Luke Shaw, I don't think, drags Oscar down, but he also doesn't push it up anyway. Luke Shaw, I think, is a perfect embodiment of Man United's level at the moment.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. I think for me, if you... Shaw wouldn't get into any of the title-winning teams of the last few years. I think if you put it like that, then you think, well, he could be the backup or the rotational left back for United if they are going to go and win a league or at least challenge for the title, rather than the starting player. I think then Williams is another very good squad player. I don't think he's going to be United's starting player if they win the league. The centre backs are interesting. We've mentioned Maguire, and I think Maguire's obviously a starter, as I said. And then you think, with a good centre-back next to him, a good pacey centre-back who can make up for his deficiencies, he'll look a lot, even better than he does now, which is pretty good at the moment he looks. He cost United too much, yes, but does your defence need to have a Ferdinand or a Vidic, which Maguire isn't? Does it need to have one of those players in it to win a title? I'm just not convinced by that. Obviously, Virgil van Dijk has taken Liverpool over kind of the precipice, but does every title-winning team need to have that defender in it? I'm not sure it does. City had Otamendi, Mangala, Nastasic. Company was great, but injured a lot of the time. Leicester didn't have a particularly incredible centre-back when they won the title. Wes Morgan was their captain. I think United could win a title getting away with Maguire and another good centre-back. Is that person Victor Lindelof, though?
No, I don't think it is. I like Lindelof, but I don't think he is good enough to start every single week in a title-winning team. Him and Maguire don't seem to have the best partnership. Their games don't complement each other. We need a much faster centre-back. And honestly, I think Eric Bailly, his game suits playing with Maguire. We just can't trust him to stay fit is the problem. So someone in that mould is definitely needed next to Maguire, I think. And Lindelof would be a very, very good, you know, rotational player. I think he's kind of similar to what Johnny Evans gave to us back in sort of the late 2000s and early 2010s.
Yeah, I agree. I think Lindelof is a good defender. And a lovely story's just come out about him, actually, in the last hour or so, about him helping a 90-year-old woman who was being robbed in the street and tackling her robber down and keeping him until the police arrive. So he's gone up in my estimation just for that. I think he's a good defender, and I think he's improved a lot since he joined United. So he could definitely be a squad member of a United title-winning team. Would he be the starting centre-back? I don't think so. Let's go on to the midfield. And the problem you have here is you've got Pogba and Fernandes. I think that's a given. Both of those are key players in a Premier League winning team. The third midfielder, and United are playing a third man in midfield, is where you get into the mix. Because if you mix together Fred, McTominay and Matic, you've got the perfect third midfielder. Unfortunately, we can't do that. And that person needs to be found, or United needs to survive this next season by rotating the three of those players, Fred, Matic and McTominay, depending on what the game calls for. And it's not the perfect solution, but I think that's possible. I think United can get away with doing that next year. And that you could, United could do with another midfield option, but the problem is, can you find someone who's better than those three to be that option? And if you can't, is there much point in signing a midfielder? Is there much point in signing someone like Mark Rocha from Espanyol or the Wilmar Barrios from Zenit, both of whom are exciting prospects, but is it worth bringing them in if they're not going to be better than Fred, McTominay or Matic? And it's a hard question to answer. What would yours be?
Yeah, I think the issue is that all three of those players are rotational players. They're not bad by any stretch of the imagination, and each individually can add quite a lot to our team. You know, they offer very different things and they're good options to have. The problem is that we're relying on them to start every week, and they should be able to come in, you know, when we want to make a tactical change, when we want to be a little bit more defensive, we can bring in Matic. When we want to have a bit more energy in midfield, we bring in Fred. When we want to have someone who can really stretch their legs and get box to box, we bring in McTominay. But ideally, they wouldn't have to be the starter. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, agreed. So that's...
So I think I'd put all three of them in the rotational player category. I think with Matic, probably the starter at the start of the season, but very much not set in stone.
Yeah, but he's not the starter in a league-winning season because he just can't do it for an entire year. And I think we've seen that time and time again. He has this great spell of 10, 15 games, and then his legs start to go. And you just wish you could have him 6 years before. Or I saw someone write, you wish you could have Nemanja Matic of 6 years ago, and you wish you could have James Garner of 6 years in the future. But unfortunately, we can't have either of them at the moment.
And I think the problem with Matic too is that, you know, he's great. His good performances are genuinely great, even now. You know, the couple of games he started after lockdown, the first few that he started, he was brilliant. But his bad games are very bad. His floor is significantly lower than what you would want from a title-winning midfielder.
Yeah, it feels like we've had a lot of players like that at United over the last few years. There are some other midfielders. I think people like Garner and Levitt, it's not kind of worth discussing them because we don't know yet. If United were to challenge for the title next year, then they'd be nice young options to have. Yeah. But I don't think we can really make a judgment on that yet because they're not going to be in that role yet. So I think you move on into the attack. We've said we'll skip Bruno and Pogba because I think we both agree they'd be key players in a title winning team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we're moving on to Marcus Rashford on the left wing.
I mean, key player starting 11 is probably one of those, and probably key player, to be honest. I mean, at this point, I'm starting to wonder how many key players you can really have, but I think him and Martial for me, at least for the next year, would be key players.
They've
proven it. Let's stick to Rashford I think Rashford has proven, you know, in the last year and a half, his improvement has been really, really good. You know, and we criticised him a little bit, and especially I criticised him a lot when Mourinho was in charge. And Mourinho mishandled him, for one, but also I didn't think Rashford improved enough. And not that he was living off the reputation he gained when he first broke through, but I think there was definitely an element that he potentially wasn't scrutinised to the same degree as other young players because of how good he was when he first burst onto the scene. But he's really kicked on in the last year and a half under Solskjaer, and I think he's a key part of our future.
So I'd agree that he's a key player going into next season. I don't think anyone can argue with that. And he's one of United's best players. On the other hand, in a Premier League winning team, I think for both him and Martial, I'd describe them as starters rather than key players. Because I think about the potential impact of Martial and Rashford, I think a brilliant player, a great person to have in your team. But maybe I'm wrong on this, but I don't look at Martial or Rashford and think they're the ones who'll lead United to a title. I think they'll play a massive part in it. But you said, how many key players can you have? And I'd probably argue two or three, in which case I'd probably remove the current Pogba from the situation as well and call him a very good starter. And so then I'm thinking Martial for me would be possibly a starting player in a title winning team. Is he going to be a key player? Probably not. But I think what we can agree on is he could easily be in the starting 11. But I think, to be fair, as much as I've enjoyed watching him recently, there is still quite a bit of improvement to go for him to be a starting player for a Premier League winning team.
I think it depends if we're talking about key players in terms of, you know, these are the best players in the team. And in that sense, I think, you know, I think Maguire is quite clearly our best centre-back. Pogba and Bruno Fernandes are quite clearly our best midfielders. Yeah. Martial and Rashford are quite clearly our best attackers. Or whether it means the leaders in the team. And I think if you're going the leaders of the team, it's quite clearly, in my opinion, Maguire, Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford. I think despite the fact that Martial is definitely on a par with Rashford, at least at the moment, I think Rashford is quite clearly more of a leader in our team than Martial. And in that regard, I would put Martial maybe a slight step down. But I think at least for the next season, Martial would be a key player in my mind. I think he along with Rashford is are the people that you're looking at to kind of drive this United team forward.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It's just picturing a hypothetical watching United lift the title, which we hope we can do in the next 5 years, but we'll see who is going to be and say they won the league for United. And I don't think it would be either Rashford or Martial. And if they carry on to improve at a quick rate, then it's very possible. But I can't, when you look back at past title wins for United and you think that the key players who won them, and not going through specific seasons, but Van Persie, Rooney, Ronaldo, who else would you, I'm trying to think who you'd say for 99 is a bit more difficult because that was such a well-oiled team. And perhaps...
Well, I guess Roy Keane.
Yeah, perhaps, but yeah, I think so. As captain, yes. But,
and Cole and York, to be fair.
Yeah, that's
well.
What I was thinking because that you had that joint strike force who also were quite often replaced by Solskjaer and Sheringham. It's kind of harder to do it. But I think generally you have...
And from a leadership standpoint, Schmeichel as well, I think he was such a talismanic figure for that team.
But generally you've got two players who stick out and I can't see though... I can see Martial and Rashford sticking out, but I can't see them being the ones you look back on and think that was the Martial season. But I really hope he shows that to be wrong. And it's possible.
Well, to be fair, I think that at the moment, the reason why it's hard to envisage that is because neither Rashford nor Martial... has had a season where they've done it.
Yeah, exactly.
Consistently.
Yeah.
You know, I think partly the reason why I have a hard time seeing, you know, as you said, kind of this being Martial's season as it was like Ronaldo's season in for a couple of years around 2008, 2009 or Rooney's season like it was sort of 2011 to 2012 or 2010 to 2012. Like, I think the reason it's hard to envisage Martial doing that or Rashford doing that is because we've seen them have spells where they are that good. Like Martial in the last 3 months is as good, maybe not as good, but it's up there with, you know, some of the spells that we saw from some of United's best players in the past, you know, Cole and York, Rooney, Ronaldo.
Yeah.
But he's only ever been able to do it for a couple of months. And so because of that, it's hard to see him doing it for a whole season and for that to be, this is Martial's season.
Yeah. To be fair, his first season when he came in, scored 17 goals and... I do kind of look back at that as the Anthony Martial season is just everyone else was so terrible and that's kind of why it's the Martial season.
It's the only source of fun watching Man United.
Yeah, and we didn't we didn't win a title and it was his season because he was the best of a bad bunch and he was 19 at the time and so 17 goals, you thought that's absolutely incredible. We should move on in a second and we're going to talk about sales. So I won't say the sold. So let's move on to transfers and think about sales. We should be able to generate some money from sales this transfer window. As of yet, we haven't done that, which is perhaps surprising, but we've got Alexis Sanchez off the wages, which is good. And then you think we should be able to get a decent fee for Chris Smalling if he leaves. I imagine he'll only stay at United if he's going to be first choice. And I don't think that's going to happen above Lindelof or Maguire, obviously. And then you think, can we get Marcus Rojo off the wages? Diordalo is one you could sell, but there's no need to really. He's a good squad option. Lingard too is another one. I think he'd even, I mean, Lingard would be still be missed without a replacement. He played a lot of football. Andreas Pereira could go, I think, but again, he'd be missed without a replacement because he too, as we've seen just a few minutes ago when we were saying he was our most played attacking midfielder, he would be missed without a replacement. So you've got these ones who could be sold this summer: Pereira, Lingard, Rojo, Dalot, Smalling, Jones, etc. But they, I think it's underappreciated the fact that they're not complete deadwood, all of them. Jones and Rojo, yeah. But you do need at least some kind of replacement, whether it comes from the academy or a transfer, to replace people like Lingard and Pereira and Dalot and Smalling. Smalling not so much at the end there, but yeah.
Yeah, we can't have it both ways. We can't go around, you know, bemoaning our lack of depth all the time and then also say we should be getting rid of, you know, six, seven, eight players without signing any replacements. And that's going to be the challenge for United this summer. You know, there's already a lot of gripes on Twitter about our inactivity in the transfer window. And I think while that's a bit overblown and a bit premature, it is coming from a place, I think, of we're all quite anxious, I think, to see how United manages to kind of retool this squad, because there are some players that need to leave. Like we mentioned, Smalling getting him off the wages. Lingard could potentially go. Pereira could potentially go. Rojo and Jones, I mean, should have been gone a long time ago. But it's tough when you think that with getting rid of all those players, we're worsening our already bad depth. And so it's going to take quite a lot of signings to, not to necessarily replace them, because a lot of those players weren't on the bench every game anyway, but to at least improve from where we are at the moment.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's a tough summer to do that because of everything that's going on. We don't know what the transfer market is really going to look like.
We're going to talk about purchases in a second, but an interesting point raised this week was how United lose money by not selling their best young players. So Dion McGee left on a free this summer. He's on trial at Spurs, or so I'm told. Adrian Gomez left on a free to Lille. Demi Mitchell left on a free. Ethan Hamilton left on a free. And look, United let these players go. Not all of them, not Gomez and McGee, were both offered new deals. But United partly let them go to ensure they have the best chance of developing, rather than making them sign a new deal and hoping and holding out for someone to come in and give them 400 grand or something, which might not be the best club for their development. But with the better players like Gomez, McGee, even players like Mitchell and Hamilton could have been loaned out over the last couple of years and then been either kept or sold. And it's an interesting point. Look, Chelsea get around 20 million extra a year by selling these kind of players. Is it moral? Depends how you do it. Tease Chong's just gone alone to Werder Bremen though, and he has a long-term deal at United. So maybe they're learning that you can loan these players out, get them good experience, and maybe Chong will come back and play for United, and that'd be brilliant. But if not, then he can be sold for 5 or 10 million. And that's kind of needed when United face so many challenges now, other clubs with the same amount of money. So that's an interesting point. But on in terms of coming ins, we finished second place under Mourinho, and that was followed by a summer of signings of Fred, Diogo Dalot and Lee Grant, which was pathetic. And I think that's a point we all look back on and think that cannot happen again. As of yet, United have signed no one, and it really cannot happen again. And whether it's Jadon Sancho or someone else, there has to be, I think, a minimum of 3 good signings this summer. And so far, there's still a long way to go, but there's only 2 or 3 weeks until the start of the Premier League. So far, we haven't seen any.
Yeah, and I think what's been strange is that we're actually not strongly linked to that many people. Normally, this time of year, every player at any top club in Europe is linked to United. Most of them just, you know, plucked out of thin air. But it's felt a little strange, to be honest, that other than Sancho, there really hasn't been that much speculation.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think we've ended up saying this every single summer since we started this podcast, but this is a really important summer for United because we have so much to build on. There is a lot of promise in this team for the first time, probably since Mourinho finished second. And arguably, I'd say there's almost more promise in this team because it's a lot younger and the core of this side is a lot younger and looks like it will improve, rather than, you know, being reliant on the likes of Ibrahimovic in that Mourinho team.
Yeah.
So I think this is just, it's so important that we get this right. And I worry that we are waiting too long because, yes, the transfer window is open for, what, another 6 weeks or so? And it closes, is it the 7th of October it closes? Something like that.
October the 5th, yeah.
So we, you know, we have another 6 weeks or so, but like you said, you want to get them in now, get them in for the whatever sort of cut short pre-season we're going to have. and so that they can start contributing straight away. We don't want to play the first month of the Premier League without these new signings.
Yeah, well, that's something United never do. And yeah, it's a sad truth of it. We're going to run very quickly through some players. We've only got a couple minutes left. Jadon Sancho, we spoke about him on the transfer special we did before the start of the Europa League. And I think I've changed my mind. I've said all summer that it would be great to sign him, obviously, but I understood how hard it was. I still agree with that. I still think it's a really hard deal to do, actually. And there's a lot of complications to it. But I really do now think that United should be willing to spend what Dortmund want on Sancho for three reasons. Firstly, there's no competition for this summer. And also, his price isn't going to go down next year. And it's either an investment for a decade or he'll be sold for as much as he was brought. So he's a great player. He's 20 years old. He's a title-winning player, Champions League-winning player. And there's not many, if any, of those players in United's starting lineup. So it's probably worth the money. There's lots of other players we could talk about. And
yeah, I mean, the Sancho deal is complicated and I do have sympathy for everyone involved in it. But I mean, I don't think there's been a more obvious signing in history, has there? It just looks like such a slam dunk. English player who can come in. And we mentioned this last time too. We can stick it to City a little bit as well by signing him. It just has everything. And the only thing that seems to be holding us back is this sticking point over the fees. And I understand that, you know, times are not necessarily tough for United. I don't think it's genuine at all to say United are going through tough times, but uncertain times, I think, is fair. And I get that, and I get all the complications with it, but it needs to happen for the future of this football club. Yeah, it just is. And there really isn't another way to put it. It just is worth it, and it needs to be done.
Yeah, and you just... What do I want my season ticket money to be spent on? It's Jadon Sancho, and that's how I feel as a fan. There's been loads of interesting other names hooked around. We've spoken about Sancho a lot, so we're not going to dwell on him anymore. David Brooks was mentioned, would be a really interesting kind of squad player to have, a really good player and a nice option to have. But if Bournemouth are going to demand 40 million, you can't see United doing that. And it's the kind of spending that City would do and that United should match, but I don't think can or will, not at the moment. And you can blame who you want for that, but that's just the truth. But it is the kind of signing that would be kind of a luxury squad player to have that United haven't done for a while, but would be really interesting. Edinson Cavani was suggested by Louis Saha as a free agent having left PSG, another really interesting one. And Dean Henderson looks like he's coming back to United, and that's definitely interesting, Jack.
Yeah, I've got to say, I didn't expect this. I really thought United would stick another year with De Gea, leave Henderson at Sheffield United for another year. But I mean, it looks like it's done. Sheffield United are on the verge of signing Aaron Ramsdale from Bournemouth, and Henderson looks like he said his goodbyes. I'm very, very interested to see how this works, because I think, honestly, the worst thing that we could do is leave Henderson on the bench for a year at United. I get that it'd been, you know, good experience for him being around the squad, but it doesn't help us or him to have him sitting on the bench. He doesn't get any better the whole time. I just don't think anyone gains from it. So at the very least, as we spoke about, he has to be in a genuine competition with De Gea for that number one spot.
Agreed, yeah.
I mean, it seems to me that if we're bringing him back, and we clearly have known about this, if it's been in the pipeline, it's not like this is dragged out to the end of the transfer window. It looks like it's been dealt with quite early on. It seems like there should be some kind of plan in place, but I think, who knows?
I think for me, you start De Gea in the Premier League, and when it comes to the first Champions League game of the season, that's where you give Henderson his chances. Champions League, FA Cup, any time you can give him a chance. And then if or when De Gea makes a mistake, or if or when Dean Henderson has an incredible run of form, then you switch it over when it's the natural time to do so. And I think that time, if it's going to happen, I think that time will be fairly obvious. But I think you have to be clear at the start of the season. You can't go in with uncertainty over the goalkeeper position. We do need to wrap things up. There's plenty more we could talk about transfers. We probably will do so when we come back for the new season. Next week, we'll have a special episode on the making of Mason Greenwood. I've spoken to a few people who have watched Mason Greenwood for many years, since he was a kid. But that's it for the season review for the 2019-20, the penultimate episode of Series 5 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Thank you, as always, for supporting us. Jack, where can we find more from you on Twitter during the next couple of weeks before we return for the 2020-21 season in a very short amount of time?
You can find me at UTDTait, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me on Twitter at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. Thank you for listening, as always. Thank you for listening for the very elongated season we've just had. We really appreciate your support. And if you're interested, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/ManUTD Weekly Pod, P-O-D at the end there. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.